And so at this time, we will move to discussion informational item, which is the Agriculture Order 4.0 options. So before we start this particular item, you know, a couple of housekeeping points. The first one is that we will finish at 6 p.m., no later than that today. And if we have not finished this item, we will continue in the morning. I will also close the speaker cards after lunch. So after the lunch, I'll do a last reminder if anyone has speaker cards. And then for some of the folks who may not be able to be here tomorrow, and you wanted to speak on this particular item, you know, let us know, write it on the card that you cannot be here tomorrow, and I'll make sure we give you a chance to speak today. That way you don't have to, you know, miss the opportunity. And then lastly, I'd like to go over some of the guidelines for today's meeting, both associated with the public and also associated with my fellow board members. So I made some notes here that I will read out loud. Today's board meeting on item 5 may extend, as I mentioned, until tomorrow. And all public comments will be heard following staff presentation. And all public comments for this item are limited to 3 minutes unless previously approved by our executive officer and myself. And we do have some pre-approved requests for extended time. And all commenters are limited to one comment opportunity for this item, whether comments are heard today or tomorrow or both days. And that's to prevent, you know, having repeat commenting on comments and, you know, stretching things unreasonably in terms of our time allocation. Interest commenters have been granted additional time, and a complete comment card must be submitted for all commenters, including those of you who have been granted extended time. So I appreciate that because it helped me when I got a big stack of cards here to identify, you know, who had 3 minutes, who had previously approved additional time. And this is an information item focused on communicating communication from staff and stakeholder options on Ag 4.0. As such, this item is a listening and learning session and not included as a decision item. So then, in terms of our board discussion, staff is not requesting board direction associated with the content of 4.0 as part of this item. The direction to our board regarding specific 4.0 item will be requested as part of future board meetings, tentatively scheduled for March 2019. Then board members are encouraged to engage in Q&A with staff to help clarify the requirement options presented by staff. And board members are encouraged in the Q&A with interested parties or providing comments, presentation written or oral, and fully understand their content. But at this time, staff will not provide assessment on response to interested parties' submittals today. Again, because this is a listening session. So I'm encouraging feel like I'm speaking from a 550-gallon wine tank here. So I'm encouraging my fellow board members, you know, ask questions, but this is not debating the 4.0 item. And then lastly, As I had shared to all of you at the last meeting, I used an analogy where I said, you know, the cake has not been baked yet. And I would like to supplement that by saying not only the cake has not been baked, but right now we're just working on the recipe. So we need your help in developing the recipe for 4.0. So I want to stress that to every one of you, that the staff presentation is to present some aspects of the recipe, and we're looking at all of you to comment, and you will have a public comment period for that. You know, supplement to the recipe or come up with a different recipe. That's the best way I can describe this. So thank you. Look forward to a very productive meeting. So would, yes.
Pardon me if I missed it, but is there a cutoff time for submitting speaker cards?
Yes. I mentioned that the cutoff time will be after lunch.
After lunch. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. So this is item 7. Item 7 is an informational item on Ag Order 4.0 requirement options. Item 5. Did I say item 7? Thanks. Getting ahead. At our September 2018 board meeting, we held an Ag Order 4.0 workshop during which panelists were asked to address at least one of 6 framing questions. These 6 framing questions mirror the primary water quality issues covered by Ag Order 4.0. At the September workshop, stakeholders from across the spectrum shared their perspectives on regulating discharges from ag activities and associated ideas regarding Ag Order 4.0. Today, Water Board staff will address each of these primary water quality issues in the framing questions as they pertain to 4.0. At this stage, these requirement options are largely conceptual, yet are responsive to each of the framing questions or water quality issues. Next week, we will begin a 60-day public comment period on the requirement options discussed today. Therefore, one of today's goals is to introduce the requirement options and provide information as needed as we anticipate that public comment period. I'd also note that there's a supplemental associated with this item that should be in the board member's agenda package, and you can find in the box at the back of the room to my right. I also want to note that we're at the very start, and I'm kind of going to reiterate Chair Wolf's point. We're at the very start of the Ag Order 4.0 content proposal and evaluation. I mention this because stakeholders from all sides of the spectrum are already expecting to see their DNA and fingerprints in the order or the options presented, and that's premature. We haven't started the debate yet. That comes after the comment period. So I'm saying let's collectively walk back our expectations of what these options are right now. With that, I'll introduce Chris Rose.
Go ahead. Before doing that, would you mind introducing our liaison?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Our State Water Board member and our liaison, Dee Dee Diadamo, has joined us. She's in the back of the room. And we'll actually have an update from her in a little later today. Thank you, Chair Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. Just to clarify, I find that I have 4 attachments provided to me in my folder. Is that the correct number plus the PowerPoint for staff presentation?
I'm going to hand it over to the clerk here.
Yes. The supplemental that he's referring to is mailed out to you in your original packet. It has a yellow cover on the front. That's the supplemental. Okay. In your folders, your binders, you have copies of the presentations that will happen today. And then you also have 2 letters that we received after Monday. That's why they're in your folder.
So one of those letters is from Grower Shipper and a consortium of ag interests, and the other is from KMI, K. Mercer.
Got them. Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so now I'm going to hand it over to Chris Rose, Section Manager of the Irrigated Lands Program.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. This is Christopher Rose. I'm a Section Manager overseeing the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Ms. Chair and members of the board. To my left is Elaine Saul. She is the Irrigated Lands Program Manager, and she'll be presenting today. And to Elaine's left is Arwen Wyatt Mayer, who is the project manager for Ag Order 4.0. So we have several presentations today, or presentations that us three are going to share. We'll begin that now. Arwen?
Good morning. Oh, you hear me? It's on. Good morning. Okay. Good morning. Okay, there we go. Okay, my name is Arwen Wyatt Mayer, and I will be presenting today a portion of this presentation on Agricultural 4.0 and the conceptual requirement options that we included in the staff report for this item and that we'll walk through during the presentation today. A quick outline of the presentation. First, similar to the structure of the staff report, we'll discuss the elements of an order. Then we'll run through each of the options tables and see how they include those elements in an order. The options tables are irrigation and nutrient management for groundwater protection, irrigation and nutrient management for surface water protection, pesticide management, sediment and erosion management, and riparian habitat management. Finally, we'll conclude with a discussion of the next steps in this process, including discussing the public comment period that will begin next week and will last for 60 days, and the workshops that we'll be holding throughout the region during the public comment period. Starting off with the elements of an order, staff reviewed various governing laws, regulation, and guidance, including the non-point source policy and its five key elements, court cases, including the appellate court decision on Ag Order 2.0, and I'll talk briefly about that. The court case found that Ag Order 2.0 did not comply with the non-point source policy. As we walk through these tables, we will present conceptual options for a way that we think we could create an order that would comply with the non-point source policy. So those elements that come from the non-point source policy and should be included in an order so that it would comply with the policy. We'll also be talking about the precedential components of the Eastern San Joaquin order. And again, as we walk through the tables, we'll be talking about which pieces come directly from the Eastern San Joaquin Order. We also reviewed the Basin Plan, of course, which establishes beneficial uses and water quality objectives that ultimately the order must protect and achieve. And it also includes adopted TMDLs. We reviewed other policies, including the anti-degradation policy, and reviewed other related permits to see how they're regulating similar discharges. So we looked at other agricultural orders, cannabis order, permits that are regulating similar types of discharges. From all of this, we established the elements that should be included in an order. Those include these kind of general elements, such as findings, conditions, and provisions. A method for prioritization is typically included, especially in a large order that covers an entire region, covers all of irrigated agriculture in the entire region. Numeric limits to achieve water quality objectives. A time schedule for achieving those numeric limits and achieving the water quality objectives. the general requirement to implement treatment and control measures to achieve those numeric limits and water quality objectives, and monitoring and reporting. These pieces that have asterisks next to them are coming from the non-point source policy and are how elements that we believe need to be included in an order that would comply with the policy. Again, Ag Order 2.0 in the recent Coastkeeper case was found to not comply with the non-point source policy, and we believe that including these elements would comply with the non-point source policy. So these four elements, as well as incentives, have been included in each of the options tables, and these are the elements that we are looking for input on. We're looking for ideas on how we can prioritize, on what those numeric limits should be, on how long or how short the time schedules should be, what the monitoring and reporting should look like, and we're looking for ideas for how we can incentivize the various water quality protection pieces of these different option tables. I'm going to quickly run through a couple of the precedential requirements that come from the Eastern San Joaquin Order. These are the ones that we'll be seeing in the options tables today. This is not a comprehensive list. For that, I would direct interested persons to the staff report or to the order itself. The order precedentially requires that irrigation and nutrient management plans be required for all ranches. In those irrigation and nutrient management plans, the expectation is that the board would collect information on nitrogen applied from all sources, similar to our current total nitrogen applied reporting, nitrogen removed, R, and irrigation management elements. So those, along with perhaps other information, would constitute the irrigation and nutrient management plan. The order also precedentially requires the regional boards to develop groundwater protection formulas, values, and targets. It requires domestic well monitoring, similar to the domestic well monitoring that we have been requiring since Ag Order 2.0. It requires groundwater trend monitoring be developed to assess the overall health of the basins and assess over time compliance with water quality objectives in those basins. It requires sediment and erosion control, and it requires management practice reporting. Again, this is not a comprehensive list of all of the precedential requirements coming out of the Eastern San Joaquin, but these are the items that will be showing up in the tables today. Water quality impacts related to agricultural discharges. During the March and May 2018 board meeting items, staff created staff reports that reviewed existing water quality data, and staff presented on those data during the board meetings and concluded that in agricultural areas as a whole, we're seeing that water quality objectives in many areas are not being achieved in surface water and in groundwater. We also looked at the primary discharges and impacts related to irrigated agriculture and found these five main areas: nitrogen discharges, nutrients and salinity, pesticides and toxicity, sediment and erosion, and riparian habitat. These five primary discharges and impacts led us to the framing questions that were posed to stakeholders and brought before the board at the September 2018 board workshop. So we had questions such as, what can growers and the regional board do to demonstrate quantifiable progress to minimize nitrate discharge to groundwater to achieve water quality objectives? A similar question for nutrient discharge to surface waters, toxicity in surface waters from pesticide discharges, riparian and wetland habitat protection, sediment discharge, and the final question was related to how can the regional board use Ag Order 4.0 discharge permit requirements to ensure current and future affordable, safe, and clean water for drinking and environmental uses. As we walk through all of the options tables today, we will relate them back to these framing questions. So from those primary agricultural impacts and the framing questions, we developed these options tables. I do want to state that these options tables, as was stated earlier, are conceptual in nature, and we are using them to solicit input from stakeholders. Another purpose of displaying these options is to show the concept that we are open to options for what Ag Order 4.0 might look like. So we continue to encourage stakeholders to submit options that we can put into the tables, and we can compare what we're proposing with what they're proposing and come up with an agricultural order based on all of these proposals and options. A quick outline of what the options tables will look like. This is just an example table. So over on the left, we have these required elements: phasing or prioritization, numeric limits, time schedule, monitoring and reporting, and incentives. And in color, the three in the middle that have those asterisks, those are the ones that are coming from the non-point source policy, and these are the elements that we believe need to be included in the order to comply with the non-point source policy. Phasing or prioritization and incentives will appear in white, not colored, and we're including them because they're a good idea for improving the effectiveness of an order. They're not necessarily mandatory, but we still want input on what these should look like. So you'll see all of these throughout all the options tables. Across the top, we see Ag Order 3.0, Ag Order 4.0, option 1, and Ag Order 4.0, option 2. 3.0 is included as a reference, so we can all be keeping in mind what we're currently requiring through the existing agricultural order. In the phasing or prioritization row, the main difference between Ag Order 4.0 option 1 and option 2 is that in option 1, we'll see a phasing approach to requirements. What we mean by phasing is that the requirements might apply to different ranches at different times. This allows us to prioritize certain ranches in certain areas for various monitoring and reporting requirements first, and then eventually roll that out to the entire region or to all ranches that should be required to perform that particular monitoring and reporting. The concept in Ag Order 4.0 option 2 is concurrent requirements. All requirements apply to all ranches at the same time. And what we're trying to do here is represent this spectrum of how we might have a method of prioritization or how we might not have a method of prioritization. The next row, numeric limits. This again is one that it has an asterisk, so it's one that we believe needs to be included to comply with the non-point source policy. In Ag Order 4.0 option 1, these numeric limits, which are the end goals, the final discharge limit or final application limit. In option 1, we see the concept is that there would be relatively higher limits. In option 2, the concept is that there would be relatively lower limits. Similarly, in the time schedule, the concept in option 1 would be having a relatively longer time schedule, and the concept in option 2 would be having a relatively shorter time schedule, meaning water quality objectives would be achieved sooner. In monitoring and reporting, some of the main differences include in option 1, relatively more estimates being accepted in the monitoring and reporting, and in option 2, relatively more measurements being required. And then finally, down in the incentives row, we'll see TBD, which means to be determined, and we'll see that in various places throughout the tables. And whenever that shows up, that TBD, that is really us looking for stakeholder input, ideas on what those values should be here for incentives. How can we incentivize? So focusing in again on these required, or on these pieces that we believe are necessary to comply with the non-point source policy, we see this asterisk indicating that they're required elements. As we go through the tables, there are some components that we've included, and we're including them as consequences per the non-point source policy's fifth key element, which states that consequences must be stated in advance, potential consequences must be stated in advance for situations where the permit requirements are not achieved. So we're marking those with this arrow so that everybody can understand that some of these requirements are included at the beginning of the permit and some would only be triggered when requirements are not met. As we walk through the tables, we'll also have stars and diamonds indicating that these pieces come from the Eastern San Joaquin Order precedential requirements. The stars indicate clear prescriptive requirements. So for that, as we talked about in the irrigation nutrient management plan, that would be the reporting of nitrogen applied and nitrogen removed. That's pretty clear. We need to collect information on applied and removed numbers. The diamond is somewhat of an interpretation. For example, Eastern San Joaquin says that irrigation management elements must be included. So we're proposing what we think an irrigation management element would be in the irrigation and nutrient management plan, but it's not as clearly prescriptive as the ones that will have stars. So that's the difference. As we're walking through the tables, we'll see a couple stars and diamonds show up. Okay, jumping into the first options table. This one is for irrigation and nutrient management for groundwater protection. And the questions that this table addresses are the nitrate discharges to groundwater and the current and future affordable, safe, and clean water for drinking and environmental uses. A couple definitions that we'll see in this table include AFER, or A fertilizer, which is the amount of nitrogen applied in fertilizers, compost, and other amendments. AIR, or A irrigation, is the amount of nitrogen applied through the irrigation water. A fertilizer plus A irrigation is the total amount of nitrogen applied. R is the amount of nitrogen removed through harvest, pruning, or other methods, plus the nitrogen sequestered in perennial crop permanent wood. The nitrogen applied in fertilizers plus nitrogen applied in irrigation water minus R is the nitrogen waste discharge, or the nitrogen loading to groundwater. And then again, TBD means to be determined and is used as a placeholder, and this is where we're one of the areas where we're soliciting stakeholder input on what those values should ultimately look like. We'll also see 20XX throughout these tables when there's a year, so that'll be in the time schedule. And that means, for example, 2025, 2030, a year like that, where we're looking for input on what the time schedule should look like. Okay. So here's the table. We're in the first row, phasing or prioritization. In Ag Order 3.0, the prioritization method that we use is tiering, and the ranch's tiers are based on the ranch characteristics, including the ranch size, crops grown, chemical usage, proximity to impaired surface waters, and proximity to impaired public supply wells. The concept that we're presenting in Ag Order 4.0 Option 1 is phases, and these phases would be based on location-specific conditions, such as, in this case, in the Irrigation and Nutrient Management for Groundwater Protection table, groundwater quality impairment, and risk to groundwater recharge areas. Over in Ag Order 4.0 Option 2, the concept is there would be no prioritization or phasing, and all requirements would apply to all ranches concurrently. So again, we're trying to present the range of prioritization, the range of phasing of requirements. Next up, we have numeric limits. This is one of the asterisk rows, so we believe that this does need to be included to comply with the non-point source policy. In Ag Order 3.0, we do not have numeric limits for irrigation and nutrient management for groundwater protection. In Ag Order 4.0, we would propose to introduce limits, one limit being in the form of a discharge limit, where we're looking at nitrogen applied in fertilizers plus nitrogen applied in irrigation water. So that again is the total amount of nitrogen applied minus the nitrogen removed at harvest, R, equals some to be determined value. And this is in this formula, this would be a loading value and would be in pounds of nitrogen per acre per ranch per year.
And excuse me, I think Mr. Younger has a question, and certainly this is a long item. So, no problem for my fellow board members to ask clarification, because if we wait 4 hours, it's going to be very difficult to get back to the question. So, certainly feel free. So I'll start, if you don't mind, with Mr. Young, and then I'll move on my right.
So my question is just directed at the nutrients in irrigation water. So we've had lots of testimony over the years about the unavailability of nutrients in irrigation water. And I'm wondering how that got resolved up at the State Water Board with their East San Joaquin order. So it's here.
Yeah, the East San Joaquin order
included
the requirement to report all nitrogen applied, including nitrogen in irrigation water. They did include all of that.
And did they, what was the discussion like? I mean, wasn't there people saying that in some situations, depending on pH or salt content in irrigation water, the nutrients are not as available as they would otherwise? How did that get resolved?
I don't know the details of that discussion, but they did include that if a ranch is only applying irrigation water nitrogen, they're not applying any fertilizer nitrogen, they're only applying that irrigation water nitrogen, then they cannot be identified as an outlier. And the outliers discussion is they're not clearly defined as yet, but they did include that. It needs to be reported. But if you're only applying that irrigation water nitrogen, there's a bit of an exemption.
Okay, I got that. But then this formula assumes that all nutrients in irrigation water is going to be counted.
It all needs to be...
If they're applying nutrients, then they have to account for all nutrients in irrigation water.
It all needs to be accounted for, reported. Where there's some flexibility is in those to-be-determined numbers. What do those numbers look like?
And what guidance do we have from the East San Joaquin order?
I don't know that it provides specific guidance on irrigation water nitrogen.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I suggest that if we don't have, staff doesn't have an answer, in the specifics, such as the question raised by Mr. Young, we do follow up on that, so make note of it, and at a future date, these items become clearly clarified. Thank you. On my right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to backtrack just a little bit because I wasn't sure if we were holding all questions to the end. Thank you, Jean-Pierre, for raising that. The question of the non-point source policy, numeric limits, quantifiable milestones, I glanced at the ag submission this morning and saw that was their first question, but I had circled it last night as I was preparing for this meeting. According to the staff report, and I'm no expert on this, the non-point source requirement is for quantifiable milestones toward achieving water quality goals. And staff is interpreting that as requiring numeric limits. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
So I guess my question is, what's the sort of the range of ways in which staff sees that quantifiable milestones could be established? I hate to admit this, I was actually dreaming about this last night because it was the last thing I was reading before I went to sleep, but you know, that's a scary dream. And it got pretty weird. But for example, would the total amount of nitrogen fertilizer sold in a region or a watershed or be a quantifiable milestone, or could it be? What are the range of things? Because I see staff is laying out numeric limits as a legal requirement. That's an interpretation, and I'm just curious what else you have thought might be potential ways to satisfy that quantifiable milestones requirement in the non-point source policy.
So I think there are many ways that you could establish a quantifiable milestone. What we're looking for is ideas, submittals from stakeholders that we can work with, thinking about the using the total amount of fertilizer or nitrogen fertilizer sold in a county. If we were to use a metric like that, we would need to be able to really make a really clear link between the amount sold and impacts to groundwater. And so the further away you get from what is actually happening on a ranch, the more difficult those links become to make. I would say another type of quantifiable milestone that we have considered is an annual reduction. So what these numbers are setting up is by this year, you need to be at this rate or this value. Another way that we could do it is each year you require a 10% reduction in the amount of nitrogen discharged. As an example, there are a lot of ways that you could go about creating these milestones. These limits are what we think are the most straightforward to understand and the best ones that we can use to link directly to water quality impacts.
So is it safe to say then, not to put words in anyone's mouth, but is it safe to say that despite the fact that numeric limits are called out in staff's presentation as a necessary element, and that the sort of the bookends of the range of options presented between option one and option two are different, potentially different schedules or for compliance with or amounts of numeric limits, that staff is open to hearing other ways in which the quantifiable milestones, a fundamental basis of that concept, can be met. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's very helpful. The second question I have is actually takes us right up to where we are right now. Looking at that top line of this table, the top right corner, no prioritizational phasing, all requirements apply to all ranches concurrently. That assumes that that all ranches will have the same, it sounds to me like it assumes, all ranches will have the same irrigation and nutrient management requirements?
That's the concept in that option two. Maybe the board determines that this groundwater protection and the groundwater nitrate issue is so important to resolve as quickly as possible that we don't build in any phasing or prioritization for that piece, and it's required immediately for all ranches.
The way I read option one, though, it would phase in over time the same requirements on all ranches. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, I know our current structure essentially is based on a whole range of things where we attempted to ascertain risks to groundwater and apply different requirements for irrigation and nutrient management to different operations. So it seems like option one and option two both presume that ultimately all ranches will have the same requirements. Is that correct?
Yes, and specifically for this irrigation nutrient management, groundwater protection, coming from the eastern San Joaquin, it is required that all ranches ultimately have an INMP, ultimately submit this nitrogen applied, nitrogen removed information. They give us discretion as to how we phase that in over time, but ultimately for this one, all ranches would be required to comply with that.
So just to be clear, I'm trying to understand our, through the course of the day today, my most important goal is to understand, as a board member, is to understand the lines between what's required of us as a board to comply with the thicket of court decisions and policies and such that we're navigating here, and where we have discretion, because I frankly don't want to waste our time on things we have no discretion on. So does the Eastern San Joaquin order require then that the same irrigation and nutrient management policies apply to all operations, or does it set a floor that is required to be applied to all operations?
I think it sets a floor that is what is required to be applied to all operations. We could develop additional criteria and additional monitoring and reporting that we might determine that we need to require for some ranches in some cases as part of their irrigation and nutrient management plan, but it says everybody must have an INMP, it must include this nitrogen applied, nitrogen removed, and irrigation management elements.
So do the option one and option two elements in table one that we're looking at here essentially constitute staff's view of what that floor is?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no add-ons here.
I would say when we get to that section, nitrogen present in the soil.
Then maybe you can identify when
we
get there.
Yeah, I'll get there, and I'll talk about why that's, all right, why thank that's you. In there. Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, so back to the numeric limits. We have this discharge limit, again, where we see this TBD, to be determined. We're looking for input on what that ultimate value should be. This is not the value that ranches would be expected to comply with day one. This is the ultimate end discharge limit. And again, the difference between option one and option two is in option one, we might see that the end discharge limit is relatively higher than that established in option two. This formula, or the pieces of this formula, nitrogen applied and nitrogen removed, are precedential coming from the eastern San Joaquin, so that's why we have a star next to them. Application limits are another item that we're considering, and this would be limiting the amount of fertilizer nitrogen that could be applied to a crop. So if we remember back to the crop histograms that we've shared with the board in the past, lettuce, broccoli, where we see the range of application values and we have those orange lines showing the crop uptake values, what this would be getting at is those ranches over on the far right that are applying a very large amount of nitrogen above what the crop can uptake.
So, quick question on that. On the application limits, you know, cannot exceed to be determined, you know, CDFA is still working on developing science-based values for various crops. So how do you envision coming up with limits? I realize it's to be determined, but.
Well, one way that we could do it would be to follow the model in the cannabis general order, where they found a typical or a maximum uptake level, uptake rate for cannabis, and then they multiplied that by a factor. So they multiplied that by 1.4 in this case, and they set a limit. So the cannabis order actually includes a set application limit of about 350-ish pounds of nitrogen per acre.
Yeah, but cannabis is a single crop and a very unusual element in the big picture of agriculture. So
right, so that's one way that we could do it, crop specific. Another way would be to say, to look at all of our crops as a whole and set a number that's far above what lettuce, spinach, broccoli can uptake, just set one standard number and say the application cannot exceed this number. If you're growing some other special crop, then you can submit to us information showing that that crop needs more than this high application number. And this is really to get at those really high fertilizer nitrogen appliers.
So in that construct, how would you propose, if you would propose, taking into account differences between ranches in different locations throughout the region, different soil types, everything that we've been hearing that makes one ranch different from another, just because one is growing broccoli here 15 miles away, they're also growing broccoli. Seems to me there should be some consideration or discussion as to whether that number should be the same or not.
Right. Well, I think you can get around that to some extent by setting the limit high enough that that should, for most people who are applying nitrogen at a fairly, at a rate that's similar to what their crop can actually uptake, they won't be affected. This would just get at those people who are really applying a lot of nitrogen, and then also build in the ability to demonstrate that their crop actually does need to uptake and can uptake more nitrogen than that really high limit that we set.
But then that is protecting those that are using higher amounts, and that might be a smaller subset of the whole group of ranches. And you know, I question whether that formula is going to encourage or incentivize driving down the excess use of fertilizer on ranches that probably could use some improvement.
Right. I think if we have application limits and a discharge limit, that will help get at some of that. The application limit is to try and get at those extreme applications, and then the discharge limit is what is encouraging progress from all ranches over time as we ratchet that down with the time schedule.
Yeah. And that, to me, is pretty black and white. That kind of makes sense. You had mentioned something earlier, and I just want to throw my comment back out, you guys, staff, to think about. You had mentioned maybe considering a percentage reduction in nutrient usage. But, you know, my question, devil's advocate question back at you is, some of these ranches may have been doing a lot of work to really make their operations very efficient. They've really dialed down their use of nutrients, maybe as much as they can get it dialed down. They may not be able to drive down their usage anymore. So why should they be penalized?
I agree, and that's part of why we considered that as a method, and then we ultimately said we should just set a limit that is based on water quality objectives and achieving them over time.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think the analogy of my colleague is on the water conservation saving. You know, if you have folks who have done an excellent job in conserving water, if you have a broad-based wholesale, well, you got to cut 10%. It's somewhat unfair, and it certainly does, in some case, technically, does not lend itself to practical possibilities.
To follow on to that, and not for discussion, but just another thought, would the reporting prior years under 2.0 and 3.0, is there any data that they would be able to demonstrate any percentage of changes they had made in nitrogen application, or is that just not something we've had any data on whatsoever, and this is our first attempt at having this type of data reported?
So we do have several years of nitrogen application data, and we could, ranch by ranch, look at changes in nitrogen applied over time. So we could, if we had a limit such as that, we could analyze the reports over time and verify compliance with that limit.
So to be efficient, I would think the farmer in reporting, and maybe this is getting too much into the weeds, but in that reporting template, there could be a way for them easily to show what they reported, the number they reported 2012, 2013, 2014, probably not that far back, but let's just say 2016, 2017, that they could put those numbers in, even as estimates, just to give you a flag that there's been some effort to reduce nitrogen applied.
Right.
So that it would be then you could see a subset where that would be a consideration that, as Chair Wolf was referring to, that already been moving in that direction, and they don't have as much flex to go much further. So just a thought for the way in which they report it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, more questions? So the next item here is ranches that repeatedly exceed the numeric discharge limit per the time schedule may be limited or prohibited from applying fertilizer nitrogen. And this is one of the consequences to comply with non-point source key element 5 that we've included in these options tables. And so this says if you don't meet the discharge limit, or if you don't meet it repeatedly many years in a row, then you might be limited from applying fertilizer nitrogen. And again, here the focus is on fertilizer nitrogen. One difference between option 1 and option 2 in this line is that in option 1, it reads may be limited or prohibited, and in option 2, it reads may be prohibited from applying fertilizer nitrogen.
So where does the authority come for that, to be able to actually tell someone on a ranch, you can no longer apply fertilizer? I'm just curious, is that statute, guidelines, basin plan?
I would imagine that it comes from the authority. Well, the authority. This is not really working for me. The authority to regulate waste discharge in general. So that would be where it comes from.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to the next section, time schedule to achieve numeric limits. In AgWater 3.0, we do not have an established time schedule to meet nitrate loading limits. In AgWater 4.0, we would propose to incorporate a time schedule. So what we see here is a conceptual time schedule, the amount of nitrogen applied in fertilizers plus irrigation minus nitrogen removed equals some to-be-determined value by some to-be-determined year in the future, ratcheting that value down over time until that ultimate discharge limit is met at some point in the future. This provides check-in points, quantifiable milestones to ensure ultimately that we are complying with the discharge limit. What we've built in here in this next line where it says or for ranches with high irrigation water nitrogen, is we've heard many times that we need to build in a way that we're not disincentivizing the use of irrigation water nitrogen and that we're hopefully incentivizing the use of that irrigation water nitrogen. So what this is trying to do is present an alternative compliance pathway for those ranches that have very high irrigation water nitrogen. So for those ranches, if we look at the formula above, it could be that their irrigation water nitrogen is so high that even if they applied no fertilizer nitrogen, they would not be able to achieve those to-be-determined numeric limits. We're trying to acknowledge that and to encourage the use of that irrigation water nitrogen. So in this formula, we're proposing that the amount of nitrogen applied in fertilizers be compared with the amount of nitrogen removed, and that we do not, in this formula, incorporate the irrigation water nitrogen when assessing compliance. And the primary difference between option one and option two in this table is that in option one, we would see a relatively longer time schedule laying out over a longer period of time. And in option two, we would see a relatively shorter time schedule for achieving the numeric discharge limits. Questions?
Yes. I'm a little confused by, it seems like discharge limit has a couple of different meanings. When I look at discharge limit under numeric limits at the top of that box, you can read it. I'm not going to try and read all that. But when I look at it's a TBD number, and then when I look in the box below it, it's essentially we're saying we're going to try and ratchet down to a set discharge limit. So is that third line down under discharge limit in the bottom box, A fur plus A air minus R equals discharge limit by 20XX, is that a TBD number also coming from the discharge limit in the top of the previous box?
Yes, that's that ultimate end goal discharge limit.
Okay, and that's at this point a TBD number also, because
yes,
presumably there's still some loss to the air. We still have to establish what we say is the amount of nitrate that can be put down below the root zone while meeting our goals.
Right. That number is still to be determined.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So it seems to me that, if I recall correctly, we do have some groundwater with some relatively high levels of nutrients. And those levels are well in excess of what might be required to grow an individual crop. Are we possibly looking at some very long time schedules to get compliance with the numeric targets? Because if the levels start high in irrigation water, they're only removing X amount, then this is going to be a very long process to achieve.
Right. It will in many areas be a very long time before we achieve water quality objectives in groundwater, especially in those areas in the groundwater where we see very high concentrations right now. One thing to keep in mind with this time schedule is this is the time schedule for meeting the discharge limit. And then especially with groundwater, there is a delay between when nitrogen is discharged and when we see it in the groundwater. So we should just keep that in mind when establishing this time schedule for when you have to achieve your discharge, that there will be still a delay.
So how are you guys going to approach then the time schedules for complying with the groundwater receiving water you know, numeric targets. Is it going to be based on the levels of nutrients currently in those groundwater basins and the amount that you are estimating is being discharged?
Those would be factors that we would consider, yes.
Do we have enough information and data to do that?
I think if we want a very precise number, then we might not have enough information. But if we want to be able to say in this spot, the concentration will be 2 milligrams per liter in 2042, that might be too high of a level of detail for the information that we have. One piece that is required precedentially through Eastern San Joaquin and that we're proposing to incorporate into this order is the regional groundwater trend monitoring. So that information would help us assess over time, are we actually getting to where we thought we should be in the receiving water? Hmm.
So I guess then the corollary to my question is in areas where the groundwater is cleaner and closer to the limits that we want, there may be a shorter time schedule to see compliance.
That's one way that we could set it up, and I think that does make sense, different time schedules. But again, keep in mind that this time schedule that we're talking about here is for discharge. It's not for receiving water meeting the objectives.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I just have a follow-up question then. So are we going to have some sort of a sub-regional approach, given that there's very specific site conditions and soil conditions and variability? Are we taking that into consideration when we're going to be establishing the groundwater trend monitoring and implementing that?
I think that we can, and as much information as stakeholders and interested parties can provide us to develop a regional approach, that would help us. One drawback to that is that if you establish different numbers in different areas, it becomes more challenging to implement. It becomes more challenging for the regulated parties to understand, okay, what am I required to do? What limit am I required to meet at this point in time? So we're trying to balance that, and we are looking for ideas and proposals for how we might, to me that sounds like prioritization and phasing to some extent. So we are looking for ideas for that.
The short answer there, though, is staff is actually having those conversations about prioritizing where vulnerable areas might exist, for example, recharge areas, and looking at other prioritization schemes or criteria.
That was a first order item as we discussed it, right? I mean, the phasing or prioritization is that first step,
right,
in the process.
Right, that first row. And that really pertains, my answer really pertains to this, table one, less so to tables 2 through 5, I think, because this one's focused on groundwater.
Okay, so the A, fertilizer equals R by 20XX, excluding that irrigation water nitrogen piece. We'll see this again in the incentives row in the table. And this is one incentive that we've come up with so far. I'll discuss a little bit later. We are still looking for additional methods for incentivizing groundwater protection.
Can you repeat that, Arwen? I missed that.
So this line that says or for ranches with high irrigation water nitrogen, A fertilizer equals R by 20XX, that is one of the incentives that we have identified that's often referred to as pump and fertilize, and we have included that in the incentives row at the bottom of the tables, and I'll get to that on a future slide. Okay, next section is monitoring and reporting. So currently, the monitoring and reporting associated with irrigation nutrient management for groundwater protection includes the total nitrogen applied report, which is required of a subset of Tier 2 and Tier 3 ranches, and it requires them to monitor and report nitrogen applied from all sources, nitrogen present in the soil, their irrigation well concentration, and an estimate of the volume of irrigation water applied. Those last two, C and D, are the pieces of information that are needed and that are used to calculate that irrigation water nitrogen applied, which again is part of the requirement to report total nitrogen applied from all sources. Next is the annual compliance form. This is required of all Tier 2 and Tier 3 ranches. It includes the relevant information for this section that it includes is irrigation, stormwater, and tile drain discharge, and irrigation and nutrient management practices. We also have the irrigation and nutrient management plan and effectiveness report, which is required of a subset of Tier 3 ranches, and they're required to develop and implement their irrigation and nutrient management plan, considering many pieces of information, including nitrogen applied from all sources, so their total nitrogen applied, crop nitrogen uptake, nitrogen removed, and irrigation and nutrient management practices. In Ag Order 4.0, options 1 and options 2, we would propose to continue to collect much of this information, combining it into one report, the irrigation and nutrient management plan and associated reporting. The irrigation nutrient management plan is precedentially required per the Eastern San Joaquin. So the differences between option 1 and option 2, because a lot of these items, all of these items are the same, the differences would be in the phasing or no phasing. So in option 1, report submittal would be based on the ranch phase. In option 2, report submittal would be required of all ranches concurrently. And down at the bottom of this row of the table, we see relatively more estimates being accepted in the monitoring reporting and more measurements being required over in option 2.
So we see some diamonds there. And I looked at your table. So the diamond means East San Joaquin order interpretation?
Yes.
Or interpretive?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So some of these pieces, like nitrogen applied from all sources, that is very clearly required from Eastern San Joaquin. Others, like irrigation management elements, that's less clear. What are the pieces of information that we need to receive from growers to satisfy that precedential requirement? So the diamonds show what we believe is the information that would satisfy the precedential requirement to include irrigation management elements. So it's just some are more straightforward, more clear, and some do require a little bit of interpretation.
So the order doesn't have any kind of, you know,
specific
frequently asked questions or comments or something that you see, you know, in the Federal Register when there's a federal reg and there's pages of discussion about how to interpret something.
So what it does have is they have developed an irrigation and nutrient management plan report template. That template is not precedential, but it includes what they think satisfies those requirements for East San Joaquin. So we can look at that and get an idea of what they think satisfies these, but it's just not clearly black and white, this is precedential.
And the state board is also trying to leave it up to some degree to the discretion of the regions a little bit to try to figure this out.
Okay. All right.
They're not providing all the specifics.
It's just an example.
Right.
This is an approach.
And they have general statements about what's precedential, but the elements that compose that precedential requirement aren't specified.
Okay. So then crop evapotranspiration, not required?
So that is an irrigation management element, irrigation management elements must be included. That is one potential irrigation management element that we could include. That one also is included in the East San Joaquin INMP, Irrigation Nutrient Management Plan Summary Report. So they have included that as one of the ways that they're including irrigation management elements.
Okay, but it's we are not required.
Right, the order does not say it is precedentially required to report evapotranspiration.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I note that that B, nitrogen present in the soil doesn't have either a star or a diamond. I assume that means because it was not a factor in the East San Joaquin order?
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
And I'm assuming that the reason it wasn't in the East San Joaquin order and that staff still is putting it in option one and option two is that in East San Joaquin, there's a lot less movement from ranch to ranch to ranch by different farmers or crop to crop to crop on different ranches? Or maybe you can explain to me why is that, why staff is recommending that that stay in there clearly because it's in option one and two.
Right. So the nitrogen present in the soil is currently part of the existing total nitrogen applied requirement. We have found that that is a good requirement to include. The requirement is for growers to test their soil to see how much nitrogen is present at least one time during the year. Over the years of implementing this requirement, we have encountered many growers who some have a robust soil monitoring program and they really use that to make their fertilizer decisions. Others have not been monitoring the nitrogen present in their soil. Through this total nitrogen applied reporting requirement, we've expanded the number of people who are performing that management practice. We think that's a good management practice. It can help you make educated decisions about your fertilizer, and we just want more people to be aware of that practice and be performing that practice.
And does that vary dramatically over the course of the year typically, or no?
The amount of nitrogen present in the soil?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, it can.
Okay, so a requirement that they test once a year.
That's the minimum. So to develop a real soil monitoring program, you would need to monitor it more. We're just trying to get more people to at least think about the nitrogen present
and
in their
soil. How complex is that testing?
It's very simple. You can do it with a soil nitrate quick test.
So it's just put some dirt and some water in a bottle, shake it up, and stick a...
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the water you're putting in the bottle.
Yeah.
Okay. I see heads shaking back there.
Yeah, and also as we learned, it would... Taking one soil sample from one place on the ranch has limited value.
Right.
So there's some, perhaps from experience or perhaps from creating a more comprehensive strategy, because it clearly has benefits to the rancher. So it would be interesting to see how that practice has evolved over time. As you say, the intent at this point, one time per year, is to increase awareness as well as to see how that data can be used.
We've been using it primarily as an educational tool. Yeah.
It's part of your data that you gathered on the nitrogen content in soil. Have you correlated that also to the time of the year when the sample was taken and what the annual rainfall was for that year? Was it average? Was it a drought year? Was it a El Nino year?
Yeah, we don't receive that information at that level of detail. We don't know where the sample was taken from, when it was taken, if it was many samples averaged over an area, many samples averaged over the year. We're just trying to confirm that people are taking at least one soil sample. So we really can't run robust analyses on that piece of information.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. The four elements that I have in this red box right here, A, B, C, and D, those are what we are currently requiring through the total nitrogen applied reporting. So that, again, is nitrogen applied from all sources, nitrogen present in the soil, irrigation well concentration, and irrigation volume applied. If we look in 4.0 option 1 and option 2, there are stars next to the nitrogen applied because that is clearly precedentially required. And then there are diamonds next to this irrigation well concentration and irrigation volume applied. And that's because those are some of these irrigation management elements that we're proposing to include. Another note here Currently, for irrigation volume applied, the requirement is to estimate the total volume of water applied to the ranch. One thing that we would propose to do in Ag Order 4.0 is to take the next step in our region and move on from an estimate to an actual measurement of the volume of irrigation water applied. This will likely line up nicely with SGMA efforts, where growers and all well users will need to be having an increased awareness of how much water they're pulling from their wells. The next piece here is nitrogen removed, R. This one has a star next to it because this is another precedential piece coming from the Eastern San Joaquin Order. And I've circled some of these requirements down in the Irrigation Nutrient Management Plan and Effectiveness Report and Ag Order 3.0 because some growers are currently required to consider the nitrogen removed at harvest. They're not necessarily reporting that information to us at this point, but they're required to consider it. Next up, we have crop evapotranspiration.
Arwin?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you repeat? How can they be required to consider it? What does that mean?
So in the Irrigation Nutrient Management Plan is a much larger and more detailed document than what we receive. What we receive is just the Irrigation Nutrient Management Plan Effectiveness Report. Mm-hmm. When they're creating their Irrigation and Nutrient Management Plan, they should be thinking about how they're going to reduce nitrogen loading to groundwater.
Okay.
And if you're doing that, then you're looking at how much you applied, what your crop needed, how much you removed.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah. Okay, so these next pieces are F, G, and H, crop evapotranspiration, irrigation discharge to surface water, and irrigation discharge to groundwater. Evapotranspiration is one that we are recommending be included in here as one of those irrigation management elements. And the idea here would be to report a reasonable calculation of the crop evapotranspiration. And then in G and H, irrigation discharge to surface water volume, we do currently receive some of that information, some information similar to that in the annual compliance form, where we receive some amount of information on irrigation, stormwater, and tile drain discharge to surface water characteristics. We would propose to improve that reporting. But again, keep in mind that one of the major differences that we're trying to present here between option one and option two is that in option one, more estimates would be accepted. So this could be an estimate of the volume of discharge to surface water and an estimate of the volume that's discharged to groundwater. And then finally, irrigation, nutrient, and salinity management practices. Management practice reporting is precedentially required to the Eastern San Joaquin. We've been collecting information on management practice reporting through the annual compliance form for many years now, so we would propose to continue collecting that information. Okay. This next slide includes additional monitoring and reporting pieces. So individual discharge to groundwater. That is currently not required. That monitoring reporting is currently not required in Ag Order 3.0. And we would propose to include it as one of these consequences to comply with non-point source key element 5, where if a ranch is not meeting the numeric discharge limit, then they might be assigned this individual discharge to groundwater monitoring. And what this could look like is using lysimeters or a soil monitoring program, something along those lines, to monitor the nitrate concentration of your discharge to groundwater and calculate or estimate the volume of irrigation discharge to groundwater. And this can be used as a tool by the growers to improve their irrigation and nutrient management practices so that they'll be able to achieve those numeric limits in the future. Next up is drinking water supply well monitoring. We do currently have that in Ag Order 3.0. It was also required in Ag Order 2.0. And it is one of the precedentially required elements coming from the Eastern San Joaquin. So we would propose to continue performing this monitoring. We are looking for input on the frequency of the monitoring, the constituents that should be monitored other than beyond nitrate, but we would propose to continue performing this monitoring.
Quick question, yes. Just back to individual discharge to groundwater. I mean, frankly, ever since we saw a presentation, must have been 3 years ago from Nicole Beck about the nifty little tool they developed for monitoring road surfaces in the Tahoe area to estimate sediment discharge. It struck me that it would be fabulous if we had a simple way to simply measure what nitrate was going below the root zone down to groundwater. But every time I've heard discussion on it, it seems to be somewhat more complicated than the last time because of, and I've gone and looked at experimental projects where they've planted 50 lysimeters in a field, and there's such variability, and such, it depends so much on when exactly you're measuring. And so is there a practical, what's the word I'm looking for? Is there a practical protocol for using lysimeters to measure nitrate discharge to groundwater? I would love to hear that there is.
I know some companies out there do have lysimeter monitoring programs, and they do perform lysimeter monitoring for growers to help growers make fertilizer application, irrigation application decisions. What this requirement would include would be most likely an individual sampling and analysis plan that the grower would have to develop. So they would need to come up with what that protocol looks like and develop it such that they are able to use that information to make fertilizer and irrigation application decisions to reduce the amount of nitrogen discharge.
Okay, thank you.
Would you say also that we need to be careful not to become prescriptive in the methodologies?
Yes, and that is part of why it would be working with them to come up with a sampling and analysis plan that makes sense for their ranch. Instead of us saying, you must install 5 lysimeters at these locations and monitor them at these times, it really needs to be something that makes sense for their ranch.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, groundwater quality trend monitoring. This has a star next to it because this is one of the precedential pieces coming from the Eastern San Joaquin. And what we envision here is something similar to the existing surface water monitoring program where all growers are required to perform surface receiving water monitoring. The vast majority of them comply with that requirement by participating in the cooperative monitoring program performed by Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc. And the purpose of this groundwater quality trend monitoring would be to assess basin health over time and to assess the progress that we're making to achieving water quality objectives in the groundwater, in the receiving water. Are the requirements of the agricultural order effective at reducing groundwater nitrate concentration?
So, quick question. We do have our own groundwater monitoring program to some extent in part of the region. How would that get married with a individual or cooperative program? You know, we do have tables. In fact, they were shown when we had the workshops on groundwater, where we do have, you know, some pretty good information. Are we looking here to further zoom in On the data, I have a picture of the charts that we're showing with our different basins and the different levels of nitrates in groundwater.
So I would say the intent behind this last item, groundwater quality trends, would be to have dedicated wells at specific screen intervals. What we're dealing with right now are other purposed wells, like domestic drinking water wells, and their well screen or municipal wells or agricultural wells, and their well screens aren't specifically placed with the intent of monitoring specific discrete intervals in aquifers. What's written up there, the intent behind that is a dedicated monitoring system, with the idea being that it's looking at the holistic health of the groundwater basin, all layers of the system. And so there probably are, long-winded way of answering your question, there probably are wells in existence that can fit into that monitoring program, but there's probably also a need for additional wells. I would say that the water agencies probably actually already have systems, and as we move deeper into the SGMA discussion, I think this creates an overlay. This requirement creates an overlay opportunity with what's going to happen in the SGMA monitoring systems. There's also other overlays or synergistic opportunities with some other programs that are demanding basin level or holistic level groundwater monitoring systems.
Yeah, and to that point, yesterday I attended San Luis Obispo County Public Health presentation. They have now the software where you can go online and look at wells data in terms of the drinking water quality. And that's online available.
That answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so that's it for monitoring and reporting. The last row of this table is incentives. Currently, in AgOrder 3.0, we do have the sustainability certification as sort of an incentive. That right now consists of the SIP certification, Sustainability in Practice, that applies to grape growers who are part of that SIP program. And what that grants them at this point, under the AgOrder 3.0 model, is a reduction in tier, which means reduced monitoring and reporting requirements. In AgOrder 4.0, one of the incentives that we discussed earlier in the numeric limits section is this pump and fertilize concept, where we're proposing to create a compliance pathway where we're not looking at the irrigation water nitrogen when we're determining whether a ranch is in compliance with the requirement. We're just looking at the fertilizer nitrogen compared with the amount of nitrogen removed. So that is one potential incentive that we are proposing right now, and of course we are looking for additional ideas, additional incentives that could be included in AgOrder 4.0.
I'm just wondering, in terms of incentives, we've got in this section, we certainly got the potential negative incentive raised of for folks who are routinely outliers on the over-application end of limiting or eliminating their ability to apply non-irrigation water nitrogen. I'm just wondering if there is a potential way that we could incentivize outliers on the other end, folks who are successfully farming with a much lower level of nitrogen to groundwater, by perhaps reducing some of the non-mandatory reporting requirements. They're frankly mostly probably the folks who are doing that are probably mostly doing all the elements of the planning we'd like them to do. But even if we reduce reporting requirements, it seems like or have a simplified form for those folks, it seems like that has an actual impact on their operations. People, especially farmers with, small farmers with limited resources or big farmers with a lot of operations, I suspect, spend a lot of time on their reporting. So I'm just wondering if staff has considered that.
I think that is something that we have considered and that is worth considering. And what we're looking for in this public comment period and as comments to these tables are ways that we can provide incentives similar to what you've just described that still allow us to verify compliance with the requirements as needed to ultimately verify compliance with water quality objectives over time. So we're looking for proposals, and we're open to.
Yeah, it seems like if we can verify compliance, we're a lot less concerned with all the BMPs and all that. Well, you know, if we get a result.
Yes.
Comment I have about the table itself is it would be helpful the way I look at things if I knew what beneficial uses we're trying to protect with this set of potential requirements. So we've got nitrogen and groundwater. I take it it's 10 milligrams per liter. Is that the drinking water standard? And if that applies, it would be nice if somewhere within table one, we're just kind of reminded that's what we're trying to do is to achieve that.
Okay.
With these requirements. And I would repeat that comment as we go through the rest of these tables. So what are the numeric numeric standards that need to be protected if they exist, or what are the water quality objectives that need to be met if they exist?
Right. And that's a good point. And for this one, you're right, the primary beneficial use that we would be looking to protect is the municipal use, 10 milligrams per liter.
Okay.
Nitrogen. Yeah.
And then question back to Stephanie, as I've been thinking about your comment about the WDRs being the vehicle for, you know, the board to be able to limit the application of fertilizer. Would that authority still exist if we were using waivers as opposed to WDRs?
The board's authority, I think it would carry over to waivers because essentially what it is that whatever constituents that are in the fertilizer that's not taken up by the crop would be waste, and the board is charged with protecting the underlying groundwater. So waivers don't necessarily have numeric limits in them, I don't think, but the board would still be authorized to regulate the waste discharge.
With a waiver?
I would have to look into that.
Okay.
To give you a specific
answer. Maybe you should do that.
Yes.
Before you answer the question so we can be really certain about it. Because that the answer may drive what we want to end up doing if everybody thinks that should be an option on the table. So.
Okay. Any other questions on table one? If not, I will hand it off to Elaine.
So before we move to table two, I would like to take a 15-minute break, and we reconvene at 5 to 11.
Chair Wolf, before we break, we're going to make a quick comment about ex parte and the changes associated with that, because part of that covers discussions that happen during breaks at board meetings. So we'll just have a quick comment on that from our attorney and then go to break.
Sure. So a quick reminder for both the board and also members of the public is that this matter is now shifted to an impending matter. So with that means that communications between the board members and certain members of the public can't happen as freely as they previously were. They would require written disclosures. And those types of communications are those that are occurring without other parties present and without notice and opportunity to participate in the communication. So that's generally interpreted as communications that are occurring outside of a board meeting where the item is on the agenda. And the types of persons that this applies to are representatives of organized environmental civic groups, those types of organizations, persons with a financial interest in the matter, And the third category of persons are those that are potential enrollees and their representatives. So these are the types of communications that are considered ex parte. And they are allowed to occur, but again, they do require written disclosures by the member of the public. And that disclosure needs to occur within 7 working days of the communication. The forms are available online on the board's website under the Agricultural Order 4.0 section. And a variation on this particular theme is private conversations with board members during breaks, during meetings. Those would be considered ex parte, so I would encourage members of the public, if you do wish to have these sorts of conversations, to make them during the comment time.
All right, thank you for that clarification, but you know, certainly does not prohibit having dialogues. I want to make sure everybody understand that. It just, we have to go to this little additional, what I'll call administrative process, but I very much encourage everyone, you know, to continue, as you see, having, you know, conversation with board members as long as it's fully disclosed. So let's take our break and reconvene at 5 to 11. Thank you.